From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sausalito.
Japantown, San Francisco.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, a new chancellor takes the reins of a troubled city college in San Francisco.
I'm confident that we can demonstrate to our peers that we're a stronger and more sustainable institution.
Then East Oakland debtors assemble to take on the national debt problem.
Stand up if you have credit card debt.
Stand up if you have a car loan. Stand up if you have a mortgage. Stand up if you have medical debt.
And a man learns how to run a library in a community with a tough exterior, starting with an intimidating patron.
A large man. He had a grill and lots of tattoos, and he said, you know, I show up to blow up, you know what I mean?
We know what you mean today on Cross Currents. Last week, we brought you a story about the planned eviction of residents from an East Bay homeless encampment at the Albany Bulb.
Out here, if I yell for help, somebody's going to come. Because my neighbors care. They do, and they're going to come.
Well, yesterday, a federal judge decided not to block the city's plan to start moving people and their things off the Bulb. And as reporter Mary Reese found, that could lead to conflict.
I'll probably have to be leaving in an ambulance.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not interested in going anywhere.
Well, a number of you had similarly strong opinions about the issue.
I think they should leave those people alone and let them live there because there is not affordable housing in the Bay Area. I go to the Bulb all the time with my dogs, and I've never been harassed by anybody. In fact, they cleaned the place up, and they've made kind of nice shelters. I think if Albany, it would be good if Albany put in some toilets. But until there is housing for people, what are people going to do?
You know, the place out there was a rubbish dump, not a park. You know, it's still full of broken this and that and the other and, you know, iron sticking out of the ground. And so it's kind of like, when did it suddenly become a park? That's my question. And I'm also very concerned about the animals that are involved because what's going to happen to them when the shelters are already all full? So, you know, I just think this whole thing is just horrible.
Those were listeners Debbie Bear and Marion Hoxwell. You can hear the full story on the Albany Bulb at our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. Across the Bay, the ongoing controversy around City College of San Francisco has taken a new turn. The college stands to lose its accreditation next summer due to fiscal problems and other issues of mismanagement. But last month, it named a new chancellor to a two-year term. His name is Art Tyler. He's an Air Force veteran who served as president at Sacramento City College. He was also the state-appointed trustee at Compton College when it lost its accreditation in 2005. Tyler's new position is lucrative. It pays $285,000 a year. It's impactful. City College serves nearly 90,000 students, and it's going to be heavily scrutinized as the school's fate takes shape. KALW's Ben Trefney went to CCSF Chancellor Art Tyler's office and asked him whether he thinks the school will indeed lose its accreditation next summer.
You know, the accreditation process is a peer-reviewed process where we all get an opportunity to make input into in creating the standards that we want to live by. I'm confident that we can demonstrate to our peers that we have overcome some of the difficulties that this institution has faced over the last few years, and more importantly, that we're a stronger and more sustainable academic and skill development institution. And I'm very confident, having been on an accreditation team, having been through that process numerous times, I have a very good feeling about where we are today, and certainly the heavy lifting that the faculty, staff, the students, and the administrators have done over the last year and a half.
You were appointed to a role with another community college that eventually lost its accreditation. And what was that experience like for you?
Compton Community College had a number of challenges. There was some fraud being done, some illicit activity being done, and the financial picture of that institution was absolutely bleak, if not destitute. And so for the first time in California history, the legislature decided that it was time for the state to step in. Now, they had done so with K-12 institutions periodically, but up until that time, which was 2004, it had never been done for a community college in the state of California. The circumstances were absolutely different than they are here at City College. Unfortunately, there were some people who committed fraud, and one person, a trustee, went to jail because of it. In essence, he stole $2 million from the college, and that's what put that institution into insolvency. And so for the last 10 years almost, that institution has been under the watchful eye of a special trustee. Now, because all of the issues that we started to uncover were so grave, the accreditation of that institution was taken away, and it was merged with another college nearby. Now, City College is not faced with that. We have wonderful people who have been working very hard, and just over time, they've not followed all the standards.
So while there were significant differences with what was going on in Compton, City College of San Francisco faces the same possible fate. So do you think that's warranted?
Well, I think anytime you don't follow the standards that you as a peer associate have helped make, then you run the risk of being sanctioned. And those sanctions, yes, are warranted if you have failed to do what you're supposed to do. But I do believe we're not going to have the same fate as Compton. It's not that we're too big to fail. It really is that we have overcome some of the challenging issues that were facing the institution over a long period of time. Given the level of energy and concern and caring that people have both in the community, I mean, the mayor's office has been just absolutely wonderful in helping us, providing staff where we needed additional support. Businesses, as well as just community members, have been partners here, and that gives me the confidence that this institution will, in fact, be accredited for a very long time.
That's CCSF Chancellor Art Tyler. Well, there's certainly a lot of support that's come out from the mayor's office. There have been lawsuits filed by the city attorney, and there's been a lot of rallying around the campus, but the accreditation deadline essentially passed in the summer. And so, I mean, when they were going to make the determination of whether the accreditation would remain or not. And so how can that change?
Well, we're not through with the process. Even though a determination was made this past summer, there are still other components of the process of review and then appeal. And we're going to follow all of those steps. And I'm confident, as I said, that what the team saw almost a year ago and what they will see today is a different institution.
Why do you think that didn't happen before? Because there was a final deadline that was set up for the summer, and there were 14 points that were brought up that needed to be addressed, and the accreditation committee said that they only addressed two of them, really. And you're saying that we're going to address it now, but why wasn't it just done before then?
Well, I think, first and foremost, it takes time to create the evidence that's needed. And I think the people here were working hard towards that effort. But when you set a deadline, you know, it's kind of like you have to have a running start before you can gain the momentum that's needed to put things in the right. And they had just started that running start. And today I'm telling you that we're at a full gallop. And let me just make a point here. We are a fully accredited institution today. Our doors are open. We are supporting and helping students get the skills that they need. for the jobs of today and the future of tomorrow.
Well, and right outside your office, it's a really live campus right now. I mean, there's students taking all kinds of classes. I mean, you've got tens of thousands of students who are attending here.
That's correct. And we're going to continue to serve those students. We're pushing forward with new programs. We're looking for partnerships with business and industry that are moving into San Francisco. And I believe that we're going to continue to be the best employment partner for this city for years and years, if not decades and centuries to come.
That was Art Tyler, the new chancellor at City College of San Francisco, speaking with KALW's Ben Trefney. The Accreditation Commission will meet in January to review its decision to revoke CCSF's accreditation. Tell us what you think about all this. Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When it comes to the state of our economy, financial headlines and unemployment figures are usually only slivers of a much bigger and more complicated story. Another window into how Americans are faring these days is their average debt. Check out these numbers. As of April, our average credit card debt is about $15,000. An average student loan debt, about $31,000. Just as bank bailouts in recent years gave birth to Occupy Wall Street, the growing personal debt crisis has spurred a new movement. KALW's Jen Cheehan went to a gathering earlier this year to speak with local organizers in this story from our archives.
When I walk into the Eastside Arts Alliance in East Oakland, it's clear that this is a special kind of conference. At the welcome table, I'm offered a name tag sticker. You know, the kind that usually says, "Hello, my name is." But these say, "Hello, my debt is."
Hello, my debt is $122,000.
$71,000 from student loans and from an accident I was in last year, medical debt as well.
Got a combination of student debt, tax debt, medical debt, which includes fixing my teeth.
$35,000, $40,000 averaging, which is more than I make in a year, so...
Bill Bowers, Christy Keller, Brad DeLang, and Renee Soto are among the 70 or so people here for something called a debtors' assembly. It's organized by Strike Debt Bay Area, the local chapter of a larger movement that came out of Occupy Wall Street.
There were a lot of issues that were coming together in Occupy that seemed separate.
Hannah Appel is one of the main organizers.
There were groups organizing around student debt. There were, you know, the health care for the 99%. Even though they seemed separate, the effect of all of these is the same. The effect is debt.
One reason it's been hard to unite around this issue is because people often feel ashamed and isolated when it comes to their debt, even though it's something that most people have in common.
So stand up if you have credit card debt. Keep your eyes closed. Keep them closed. Keep them closed.
To make this point, the Oakland Debtors Assembly starts with an exercise.
Stand up if you have medical debt, medical bills that you can't pay.
By the time the exercise is over, almost every single person in the room is on their feet.
Now open your eyes and take a look around. So obviously we are not alone. All of us feel this pain of this debt. We are not alone by ourselves, and we are not alone to these banks. Have a seat.
Everyone sits back down, and then there's a kind of big-picture presentation to explain different systems of debt and debt statistics from around the country.
You've got consumer debt going way up, and the only thing that's going down is our wages.
The presenter is Claire Haas. She's a staff organizer with ACE, the Association of Californians for Community Empowerment. She got involved with strike debt through her work helping people facing foreclosure. And even though her organization focuses on individuals, she says if you go up the financial food chain, you see how debt can cripple entire communities.
We see cuts to schools, to libraries, to public transit, to services that people depend on day in and day out. But at the same time, we see millions of dollars every year being paid out to Wall Street by our city governments. They've given them bad deals. And we shouldn't even be talking about cutting another penny from our communities until we actually get the money back that the bank stole from us.
When Haas talks about banks stealing and giving bad deals, she has specific examples in mind. Like when GE, Wells Fargo, and JP Morgan Chase admitted illegal activities by their employees after being sued by the federal government. They paid billions of dollars in restitution and penalties. And there's a growing number of these cases as we try to figure out what or who caused the financial crisis. The problem, Haas says, is that these cases can get pretty confusing.
We talk about LIBOR, we talk about interest rate swaps, letters of credit, etc. And most of us say, I have no idea what that is.
But she says it's not necessary to know the finer details of the LIBOR scandal, for example, to understand how it impacts regular people.
You put a lion and a boar together and you get a LIBOR. But that's not really what it is.
So with some visual aids, Haas explains that LIBOR is actually an acronym for the London Interbank Offering Rate.
And so basically what happens is every day the bankers in London, they get together and they decide the interest rate they're going to trade with each other at. And so there's $800 trillion that are affected by this rate across the world.
That $800 trillion includes a whole range of financial products and services, like mortgages, pensions, student loans, car loans, and credit cards.
And the way that it worked is... they would get together in this meeting to determine the interest rate, and they would determine it based on how they were going to make the most money. And what was found out is that they cheated.
This means that millions of people were paying more interest than they should have. Even some city governments were earning less from their investments, which means having less money to spend on things like schools, police, and hospitals.
This is unprecedented. This is not like any of the other kinds of debt stuff because they've admitted that they were wrong. They've admitted that they cheated. They broke the law. What they did is illegal. And we can sue them for it.
First, I think the idea behind strike debt is just empowerment.
Organizer Hannah Appel says that once people are armed with this kind of knowledge, they can take action.
We can renegotiate interest rates. We can default en masse on our debts.
And while the idea of mass defaulting on debts may strike some people as irresponsible, Appel says it's something that banks themselves are already doing.
Banks know that they don't have to pay their debts, right? There's been the thing where they know that they're going to get bailed out, or banks know that they can renege on contracts or renegotiate interest rates. But we as citizens have not sort of taken that power into our own hands or realized that it can be ours.
So the strike debt movement wants to make that happen. Last year, the New York chapter came up with a creative strategy to erase people's debt. They called it the Rolling Jubilee. Basically, the organization became a debt collector. Debt collectors buy unpaid or distressed debt at a big discount and then try to make a profit by going after the original amount.
The Rolling Jubilee raised money to buy people's distressed medical debt for pennies on the dollar.
But instead of collecting on that debt, they forgave it. Strike Debt recently announced that it's abolished over $1 million worth of medical debt, belonging to about 1,000 people chosen at random.
I think debt, like any other contract, needs to be entered into at a level of fairness.
That's another organizer. We'll call him Mike Smith. He didn't want to give his real name because he works for one of the big banks. He says the financial system that he's a part of isn't fair when it comes to debt. He has a good credit score. But he says,
I could just as easily be somebody who's a victim of predatory lending, someone who has had to use payday lending, some of these more sort of parasitic lending practices.
Smith says he makes a good living, but even he's not immune to financial trouble. He's paying off a mortgage, student loans, credit card debt, and...
Recently, I've had, has had some health setbacks, which has both reduced our income and increased our medical expense, and it makes things very precarious for us.
At the end of the debtors' assembly, people break out into smaller groups. Like Smith, they share stories that sound like they could happen to anybody. Getting into a car wreck with no insurance, graduating from college with a student loan and no job, or owing more on a house than what it's worth.
And so $1,000 of the payment every month goes just to interest. And the other $400 is the principal. And, you know, if it weren't that way, then, you know, my life would be totally different.
When everyone walked into the room a few hours ago, they may have felt their debt issues were insurmountable. But by the end, I see a lot of smiles and people listening intently to each other's stories. And though their problems may not all be solved today, at least they know they're not alone. In East Oakland, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
The next Debtors Assembly is on Sunday, November 24th. For more information, go to kalw.org, click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now we'll stay in East Oakland for another story from our Here, Here community storytelling project.
Here?
Here?
Here.
Okay, together. Okay.
Here, Here from KALW.
For about a year and a half now, we've been popping into the 81st Avenue East Oakland Library to record the stories of the people who live and work in the neighborhood. Today, we meet the man who helps make the library a safe and valuable place for the community.
My name is Anthony Propernik, and I'm a senior library assistant at the 81st Avenue Community Library, which is in East Oakland. It's an interesting neighborhood. Not many people who live outside of East Oakland know the reality of East Oakland. I think there's some perceptions about how tough it is, and it has that element, but it also has a lot of wonderful people. What I love about working here at this particular branch is that my job is meeting people. My job is connecting with community. Some of the people that have come in, especially in the 81st Avenue branch, it's been such a blessing because there's no place like this in East Oakland. It's a place that's open to everybody in the public. So who comes through the door is everybody, and people are so appreciative. And it really starts off and blossoms some really wonderful relationships. I've been developing a relationship with this man who's about my age. I'm 42. When I first met him, he was kind of intimidating to me. I first met him over a conflict that he had with us not having bags to put his books into. This was a large man. He had a grill and lots of tattoos, and he said, you know, I show up to blow up, you know what I mean? And I pulled him aside and I apologized, one, for not having the bags. And I assured him that, you know, even though we might not have bags for your books, that we really want your experience to be good here. And it broke down a barrier. And since then, he hangs out with our security guard. He talks to everybody. He's always smiling and joking. I like to think it was refreshing for him. It's definitely been refreshing for me. And I really enjoy the relationship that I have with him. We have to make sure that we stay relevant to the community. So if we are quiet, hush places and books only, we're not relevant to this community. I think we have to provide a safe place. We have to provide a place that people can come and hang out and exchange ideas and develop a sense of community because of the hardships of daily life here. To be able to provide a place that's fun and joyful, that's my job. Patrons really understand that. I think that they appreciate how much fun we have here. For example, we had a national night out party, and we had over 200 people. We fed everybody. We had a raw egg toss and a jumper and hula hoops, and we gave away free prizes. And people came in the next week and were talking about that party. One woman in particular came in the next day just to tell me that. She said, you know, the party that you guys threw, you know, I've been to these parties, and this was the best one I've ever been to, and next year I'll help. Whatever you guys need, I'll help. I'll volunteer. And I think that's beautiful. That's why I love my job. That's why I love to be here, and I just feel fortunate to be a part of that with all these wonderful people.
Thank you. That story was produced by Melanie Young for our community storytelling project, Hear, Hear. And we're proud to announce that KALW has won an award for community journalism from the Society of Professional Journalists for Hear, Hear. Thanks to all the library patrons who've shared their stories with us to give this project life. You can hear them all at KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents. That's all for today's Cross Currents. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Pfeffer, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. And a big congratulations to Jen Sheehan, who will also be presented with an award tonight for Outstanding Emerging Journalist. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. This piano is being played by Sarah Cahill, host of Revolutions Per Minute here on KALW. You can hear her play live this Friday with Regina Schaefer at the Center for New Music in San Francisco. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.